Welcome to the Fayforge Academy, everybody. Today we've got Michael.
Hey, Michael.
And M.
I remembered to unmute myself.
And Lonzo.
Hey, it's Lonzo.
Which you remember from our current ongoing arc in Fayforge, and for the first time ever, guesting with us is Robo. Introduce yourself, Robo.
It's me, Robo Goblin. And I don't know what else to say.
That's it. That's plenty.
That's it. Awesome.
Do you have anything going on right now that you want to plug?
Not right now.
Even if you have like a Twitter or something, just so.
Yeah. Where are you?
At TTRPGifts everywhere. Blue Sky, Twitter, whatever. And thank you so much for having me.
Love it.
Well, but I heard you like Mildex.
Anyway, I'm just going to log off. Thank you so
much.
Wasn't denied.
There's no screening process at all. We just, you know, randos on the street invite
Welcome,
them
Robo.
To come be
Welcome.
On the show.
Thank you.
No, Robo is a longtime friend of many people at the table and part of Fayforge, and you can catch them all over the internet doing cool stuff from time to time, so be sure to follow them. We have partners. Let's see. Found Familiar Coffee. If you enter Fayforge at checkout, you get 10% off. They do like tabletop themed coffee. I think they have some merch too. Found Familiar Coffee. I think it's just foundfamiliar.com. And another friend of the show is Greenleaf Geek. Leah is Greenleaf Geek and does custom dice. Does all kinds of fun curated dice sets, and you can enter Fayforge at checkout for 10% off. It applies to everything except custom sets, but we all have custom dice from Leah, and they're incredible, so you should check her out. You should join our Patreon. It gives you access to our Discord, and we hang out in there. They post links. Steven will post links whenever we record now, so you can hang out with us while we record live sessions. And it's only $2 a month. And you should support us, because it's a nice thing to do if you like the product that we're making, if you can. And if you can't, at least download our episodes and listen on your favorite podcatcher, whether that's Apple, Spotify, whatever. Leave a 5-star review, because that is also helpful, and it's free. And I think that's all we've got. So, let's jump in. We are going to today together tell a story about four brave fairy adventurers who have been sent out to recover or rescue one of their own. This story, if we were to start it at the beginning, would take us days to recount why these fairies are in the Shattered Wastes, how they came to be here, and we don't really have that kind of time. So we are going to jump into the story where it starts to get good. And as such, I am going to have all four of you actually go ahead and roll me initiative.
Oh, God. Okay.
Wow.
Oh,
okay.
Okay.
Wow.
Chris got that dog in him.
Got 22.
22?
Dirty 20 for me.
I rolled a D100, so I'm not. Wow.
Just playing a totally
82. I always go first.
13 for me.
Okay.
9.
Well.
Cleric life.
All right.
Thank God we have a cleric.
I love this so much.
Heal us.
Oh, you think I'll heal you?
Batting cleanup.
Classic cleric.
So, the scene that we are kind of zooming into is a small group of individuals who are all sort of standing or fluttering, perhaps, whatever your propensity might be, back to back, each of you looking out across this red desert landscape. You see streaks of red and maroon and black sand extending as far as you can see in this moment. In the far distance, in the direction that you were heading before you were accosted, you can see a massive mountains that are jutting up out of the landscape at kind of odd angles, but you know that that is ultimately where you are headed, to the east, away from your quiet home glade. In this moment, however, we're going to start with Tiburon. Am I saying that right?
Tiburon.
Tiburon.
But do your best.
I'm going to do my best. Describe to us what they look like.
Tiburon uses any pronouns. They are a fairy with two wings, kind of like deep blue. Their skin is mostly like a deep blue ocean color, lighter blue hair. They took their teeth and kind of filed like the kind of file them down to like little big chompers, and is wearing no shirt and green seaweed like color shorts, and has a double bladed scimitar at the ready, and they just have like a look of like excitement, and they're just ready to just go at it, and they feel no fear at all, just wanting to get in on whatever is coming their way.
Well, their wish will soon be granted. Everybody give me either a history or a nature check.
10.
17.
Oh my god. Natural 20.
What?
Let's go.
Oh.
Yeah, who knows?
Okay. Is 12. It, you said 12. Is it our history or nature?
Mine, I rolled, I would say history.
Okay. As the four of you feel the tips of your wings kind of fluttering very near your compatriots, you all look out over this mob of creatures that appear to be, while kind of small, still quite formidable. These six-legged creatures with tiny, stunted wings are skittering towards the group of you, forming this mob encircling all four of you. Let's see. Rizal, is that how you say it?
Rizal, yeah.
You immediately recognize these creatures from perhaps something that you studied, some sort of survival guide. There are fae that leave the glade from time to time, kind of assessing the risks outside of your home. Of course, I would not say that there are schools, so to speak, but knowledge is passed down from generation to generation. And at some point, you learned about this creature called a krask. They have flat, slimy faces with a third eye in the center of this, like, flattened visage. Humanoid mouths, although they do have long pincers that descend out of the top of their mouth. Long clawed digits at the end of each of these six legs. They do seem to be able to fly, though perhaps not very far or very quickly. They are, however, moving fast, having surprised the four of you as you made your way away from home. Let's see, Tiburon, you are first to act. You are surrounded by these creatures. You're not sure. 10, 30, 50, maybe 100. What would you like to do?
I'm going to cast Enlarge on myself.
Okay.
To become a much larger fairy. And then I'm going to go to the closest one and take a swing at one of these crass creatures.
Okay, sure. As you cast this spell, I also need you to give me a D100.
No problem. Sounds absolutely 40.
Okay. Tell us what you're doing. You move towards these creatures and?
He's just going to come out and go fly out. Mm-hmm. And he has his scimitar up above his head, so it kind of looks like a shark fin. And he's just going like, ba-na, ba-na. And as he gets closer, he's going to go like faster and faster. And at the end of his dinner, he's just going to swing at them. He's going to make an attack.
Okay, go for it.
For 27?
That'll definitely do it.
And then it's going to be 9 points of slashing damage.
Okay. Yeah, you swing out with this scimitar that resembles this shark's fin and easily cut through several of them in your immediate vicinity. They seem to just sort of, they obviously aren't very resilient, and all of the ones that you make contact with fall at your feet. Is there anything else you'd like to do with your turn?
That is it.
Okay. That brings us to Clove. Clove, as Tiburon turns, you see that their eyes are alight with this bright golden light. You've never seen this before, but it is your turn. Why don't you describe your character for us and what you would like to do?
Sure. First of all, seeing the cool glowing eye badass shark fin that just went down, I go,
whoa, that's so cool!
then little tiny Clove, who is a sort of this, has like an olive skin tone, but fully just tatted up with all kinds of different imagery, lots of like bones and like strange creatures and things like that. They've got this long, like fiery red hair that's cut into all these like strange choppy pieces, and they're wearing just sort of like what looks like repurposed bandages, but they're really cool looking. They've like dyed them and embroidered them, and it's a fun little put together outfit. And their left arm, instead of being an arm, is this very intricate metal contraption in the shape of an arm, made out of these sort of weathered red painted pieces of metal. And on their back, they pull off this draconic-looking bow that the tips of the bow sort of look like the ends of a dragon wing. And they pull the bow out from behind their back and knock an arrow and take aim at these weird little guys.
Love it. Go for it.
Great. And I am going to... Well, first I'll roll the attack. does a 27 hit?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Word. I'm actually going to use one of my arcane shots.
Okay.
I'm going to fire a bursting arrow.
Okay, I love that.
So I'm trying to fire into like a grouping of them.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll hit the main creature and then every other creature within 10 feet.
Okay.
Each of them will take, I guess, since we're going... Actually, no, that's the magic damage. Okay, so... The damage from just the arrow itself is 9 points of damage.
Okay.
And then from the arcane shot, they'll each take two D6 force damage. So 5 force damage each.
Okay.
And then on top of that, the bow will deal an extra 1d6 of acid damage to the main one.
Whoa.
So that'll be 4. 4 acid damage.
Okay. What does it look like as you take out, like, a huge swath of these creatures?
Yeah, so the little, the bow fits perfectly into their, like, prosthetic arm. You almost, like, hear the click as the arm locks into bow position. And then from the quiver on their back, which is sort of embroidered in very similar imagery to all the tattoos that cover their body, they pull out this arrow and they knock it and they run their other hand along it, and you see the arrow itself start to glow, and then they give it this little flick at the tip of the arrow, which the tip itself starts to glow this like acidic-y, like yellowy green, and it fires into that crowd, and it just... It's like a mini-contained sonic boom where you just see, like, the air ripple out around them and smack all these weird little creatures within 10 feet. And the main one, as the arrow pierces through it, it just dissolves through its flesh.
Wow. Yeah, just as you say. Give me a D100 roll real quick, Em.
Yes. 46.
Okay. That does bring us to... these entities, who I'm just gonna to keep it dirty, are starting to get sort of eviscerated in your immediate area by Tiburon and Clove's actions, and a few of them are starting to scatter in your immediate vicinity. Those that are closest do attempt to like jump forward and bite at you all, but they are not able to do so, as you guys are kind of like have your defensive maneuvers going and have your eyes out on this swarm of these creatures that is surrounding you. Each of you in this moment, you see Clove's arrow explode, and you all get filled with this like this sense of purpose and determination, and like somebody's on your side, whoever it is. You each get the benefits of the Bless spell.
Ooh.
Why, thank you, Chloe.
For the next minute. Additionally, Tiburon, you have true sight for the next hour.
What?
Oh, hell yeah.
That does bring us to Rizal's turn. Rizal, yeah. Would you please describe your character and tell us what you'd like to do?
Okay, so my character he's a darker skinned, like Polynesian skin colored fairy, has like bamboo clothing on the first layer underneath, and then over that he has like a layer of clothing that's a vest that is made of like pineapple fibers and stuff like that. And pants are very like loose fitting type pants. Has a great axe on him. He pronouns on Rizal. And it's like wrapped in leather, the handle, and it has like feathers and leaves on it and some ribbons. And his wings are kind of just like classic like monarch butterfly type stuff, with that nice orange color, and his skin's like bronze, and he has like, you know, kind of like a 2 inches of hair that he like styles kind of nicely, and dark hair. So he looks at one of the who's the person who's closest to me who's being attacked? Do I have, like, a reference, or is it me?
That is totally up to you. You all are kind of clumped together as these creatures swarmed out on either side and sort of surrounded your group. So, whoever you would like.
The closest one I feel like I should take care of to keep the party, like, you know, safer, have us seem more aggressive. I'm gonna take my great axe, and I'm gonna roll, see if I hit explain anything.
Okay.
Because, you know, I love this. Oh, actually, before I do anything, I am going to rage. Rage. That is what I'll do. You know.
Yeah.
And I I would like to attack recklessly, huh? So I'm going to attack reckless.
Okay.
All right. Okay. So that is going to be a 22 to hit.
Yeah, that'll do it.
21, rather. And I'm going to come up with, like, just ready with the uppercut. Like, I was basically up high with my axe and saw one come in, and I just reversed the swing and try and come up with the uppercut.
Okay.
With the axe. And so that'll be a d10 via the fairy rules.
Mm.
So 7 points of slashing damage, I believe.
Okay.
And I will add... Never been a barbarian. You have to add something. Oh, 2 plus 2. Another 2 damage to that.
Okay.
Yep. Perfect. So I'll do that, and then I'll take another attack towards it. And then this other attack, I'm going to dislodge my axe and then just do like a quick like horizontal strike towards it.
Love it.
This is also reckless. Okay, so 16 for the second.
A 16 will do it, yeah.
Okay. And it's an 8 plus 4, 12, plus another 2, so 14 slashing damage.
Dang.
And yeah, I'm just yelling, get back, and I'm just like pushing, like basically just like, you know, in this battle frenzy, ready. You know, Rizal loves battle. He loves taking care of protecting his friends, so
yeah.
He's having a good, this is Rizal's happiness.
You are swinging this great axe with precision, but you do manage not only to hit the creature that you're aiming at, but you also make contact with a few near it. And even as you're swinging, the ones you don't make contact with start to bail and scatter. You guys are starting to thin this little swarm out pretty quickly. All right, that brings us to Marte.
Imagine a grasshopper. That's it. But right now,
I imagine it. I have it.
There you go. Use your imagination. And now you imagine a grasshopper. It's a big...
I love it.
Big, slim body, antennae, big eyes that look like the darkest part of the ocean, and like really powerful legs. So it's like they all day for them. They use... any and all pronouns, and they also have like a magenta vest on them right now. So as soon as they see every single attack from my companions, they just say, "Oh dear." And are any of those creatures in a, let's say, in a 10-foot radius?
Yes.
Okay. Right now, so Marte is completely white skin, kind of looks translucent, and it's like he steps back and
okay,
starts shedding their skin.
Okay.
So,
hell yeah.
So it kind of looks like a ghost coming up. And now I look like completely camouflage, like a leaf, a green leaf.
Okay, love it, yeah.
And I grab my skin duplicate, and I throw it to them.
Okay.
And I cast Shatter on them.
Oh, wow. Amazing.
Yeah, that's badass.
Cast your spell and give me a D100 roll in addition to that.
Okay. So 65 on the D100?
65. Okay. What does it look like as you cast Shatter?
It looks kind of my skin duplicate. It's like a meteor strike over on them, and it's explosions everywhere. But you do have to make Constitution 14.
Okay. That's a 7.
All right. So it crashes real hard on them, and they take 21 thunder damage.
Whoa!
Holy guacamole. Marte, you toss this shed skin and call out the components for your spell. But what the rest of you see is, as you glance around, it almost seems like time kind of freezes for just a split second. Marte is standing completely still. You don't see them speak or move or anything. And all of a sudden you see this explosion take out a huge chunk of this mob. Almost like it happened out of nowhere. You probably recognize the kind of arcane signature and coloration of Marte's spells, so you can safely assume that that is their magic, but you didn't see them do or say anything. It just, in a split second, there was an explosion, and now a bunch more of these creatures are gone. Anything else you'd like to do with your turn, Marte?
That is all.
Okay. That brings us back to the top, Tiburon.
How many are near me?
They are filling in the space as you are dispatching and destroying them, so they are just continuing to swarm in your direction. Whatever one has fallen, another one closes in.
Okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to cast Sword Burst. So he holds up his sword up in the air right above him. And he just lets out like a large, loud scream and brings it in front of his chest. And as he does that, there's going to be he's going to be surrounded by a bunch of spectral looking blades around him. So any creatures within 5 feet area within me, around me, has to make a dex save or I take 1d6 damage. That's going to be spell save of 14.
That is a 15 on the die for them.
Oh, that's awesome. Good job, them. Good job. So I think nothing happens because of that. But what I'm going to do then is I'm just going to take my double-bladed scimitar and just slice at the closest one near me.
Love it. Go for it.
That's a 27.
That'll do it.
And that's going to be 10 points of slashing damage.
Whew. All right.
I think at that, like, when he starts to... after that slash, he's going to realize he has his true sight. And seeing, like, anything and everything, and he's just trying to, like, squint at something far off in the distance, and he's realizing that he can now see into the ethereal plane. They are just going to be absolutely bewildered at this. Faye is just getting this flood of a new experience, and Fair is just going to be overwhelmed by it, and just jaw just opened up, gaping wide, just besides themselves of what's happening right now. And I pass it to Clove to do some badass stuff.
Yeah, brother. Alrighty. Okay.
Clove, so, for what it's worth, as you look out, most of these creatures have been dispatched. There are a few that are still advancing on your group, but you have, the four of you have dealt with the large majority of them.
We've handled it.
Pretty sweet.
Cool. Well, for the last couple of dummies who are advancing on us, I'm gonna attempt to stop them. And that's that is a miss, I'm pretty sure. Is a 13 hit?
That'll do it.
Oh, never mind. Scratch that. Okay. All right. So that'll be 10 points of damage, and then on top of that, another 3 points of acid to one, and then forgot I have an extra attack last turn. We don't have to talk about it. I knock another arrow. This happens every time. Assuming you get 22 hits.
It'll do it.
Sweet. I want to target a different one than the one I just hit. I want to hit one and then another. Okay, so that's going to be 9 points of piercing damage and then another 5 of acid damage on top. So quick as the wind, just thunk, thunk, right after each other. 2 more arrows go whizzing by my compatriots' ears, lodging into these creatures and then starting to just dissolve through their flesh as they make impact.
Amazing. You all see Clove fire these 2 arrows in rapid succession. And as the kind of splatter of acid washes up momentarily, and you see like these arrows slam into these creatures, they are all dispatched. The few that remain run for their lives, and there is just this pile of bodies all around all 4 of you, of these bizarre Krask creatures. In this moment, as sort of the dust settles, what are the 4 of you doing in the immediate aftermath? If anything.
Do their pincers seem harvestable?
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
I want to yank out some of them for a craft project.
Absolutely.
Craft project.
It's not hard to do.
Yank
you get
them out
like
for craft.
A couple of craft fistfuls project. Of these like pincers. And when you do have to be careful because you note that the little barbs on the end of the pincers seem to be have like tiny little hollowed out tips. Not unlike a tattoo machine or a needle that you might have used to deposit ink. And you know that that's how they poison their victims, is by clamping on with these pincers and injecting the poison thusly. So you do have to be a little careful, but you have now several of these poison pincers.
Awesome.
Are these creatures, as us fairies, do we see these creatures as like... more beast-like, or more like, what do you call this? More, not to say this, like, more sentient, or like, a higher.
Mm-hmm.
What
these
are we
would
see?
Be definitely categorized probably as pests, or beasts. Okay. They are not, like, thinking, feeling creatures. And I would say if all 4 of you know just innately, that these creatures are affected by some strange or aberrant magic. They are not native to this place in, like... They are not adapted for these surroundings. This creature and other creatures like it that you probably all 4 have encountered have a like, an alien quality to them. They don't... they are very dissimilar from, like, the beasts that you might hunt normally for food or for pelts or that you might keep as pets or beasts of burden. They are unlike those creatures. These are monstrous.
Might be because I've been playing too much Helldivers 2 and watching Delicious in Dungeon from Netflix, but I'm gonna get some bug meat. have some so we can cook some later, maybe.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm gonna harvest some of that.
I love that. We got macaroni and carb, like, necklace and some stew. I love that. Yeah,
exactly. So, Clove and Rizal, the 2 of you start breaking down these creatures as best you can. Tiburon and Marte, what are the 2 of you doing?
Marte's looking around and then looking at the companions. And at any of you have any... injuries.
I'm fine.
Okay.
No, I think we took good care of them.
We did. Congratulations to all of us.
I like the part where you ripped off your skin. So fucking cool.
thank you. So this skin is new. Does it smell? Is it stinky?
No.
Awesome. Smells quite fresh.
Ah, okay, okay. That always is on my mind. Whenever I change skin, it's always on my mind. Oh, okay. Do we need to get information from them? And I point to the bodies of Krask.
I I take my axe and like kind of scoop it under one of the one's heads and like lift it up a bit. I don't think you're going to get any info from this one.
Oh, you'd be surprised. And
I grab one of them by the neck and I start punching it. And I'm like, what do you know? It's so, fully dead, though.
Wow.
not like that. Oh, okay.
Oh. In this moment... Oh, sorry. Did you have anything that you wanted to do, Tiburon?
At this moment, as everyone is just pounding away at Crass or trying to talk with it, Tiburon just drops to his knees, the scimitar at his side, and is just still peering out into the distance, into like this ethereal plane. Seeing as we're all fairies and like we come from a magical place in and of itself, I think it just like pales in comparison to the ethereal plane, and it's just so vast on her mind, just like it's nothing that they could have ever surmised or comprehended or thought of, and I think just completely spaced out information overload.
Yeah. We're gonna pause in the middle of Tiburon's existential crisis. And we're going to rewind a little bit and talk about how you got to this place. It was yesterday afternoon, not that long ago, that each of the four of you were summoned to meet with one of the elders in your glade called Nobi Echo, a member of one of the longstanding Fae families in this community. Out of curiosity, are any of you in, or I should say, are any of you in the same clan as one another, or related to the Fae that you are looking for in any capacity? There's no wrong answer.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah, neither you am I.
Okay.
Nope, don't think okay.
so. I think... potentially Clove is a distant cousin of the Fae that we're looking for.
Okay. That feels accurate. So, we'll start then with you, Clove. Nobi Echo is your Nobi also. Being of the same family, although it is distant and kind of separated by a few branches, there is a connectedness in this family tree. And you, I would say, probably get the sense that somebody needs your attention before anybody asks you. But out of curiosity, who in your family would have sent you to Nobi Echo? Who would have said, hey, Clove, Nobi needs to see you?
Probably a sibling of a parent.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm trying to remember the terminology here.
I don't think I gave you that one.
Neutral.
Yeah, I have... Oh, gosh, that reference is somewhere else. But you can refer to them as Baba for this. It's a generational thing, so...
Sure, yeah.
That works.
So, yes. My Baba was like, you gotta go do this.
Okay.
Make
yourself useful. Well, speaking of that, Clove, what do you do in your community? Do you have any talents, gifts, hobbies? Like, how do you keep yourself busy?
Yeah, so in my mind, Clove is somewhat of a scavenger and a tinkerer, definitely better at the first one than the second one. They are, I think, an apprentice to somebody who is a much better, tinkerer, who helped them make their arm, when it got eaten a while ago. So they very much run around gathering scrap material for their teacher, if you will. And they're trying to get better at being crafty.
I love that. Okay. So Clove, you are summoned to go see Nobi Echo. And Echo is an older fae, very dark, kind of purplish tinted dark brown skin. They have really bright green eyes, and like long, whitish gray hair that has sort of like naturally occurring locks in different places. It's not super well kept. Although this person does not sport a beard, they have like this very stately air about them. They are very well respected in this community and one of the oldest fae here. And so upon receiving a summons, which may or may not be common for you, you hightail it in that direction. You make it to Echo's part of the glade. And this family really, all of the families kind of nest differently. Some families nest in massive, like, hive-like structures where everybody shares the same space. Some families are a little bit more spread out and they settle in smaller groups. This particular family is one such family that is a little bit more spread out. So Echo's space is largely their own. And you make it to that part of the glade. It is quiet, kind of further away from like the hustle and bustle of the main part of this community. And you find them inside, kind of milling about, rustling through what look to be a bunch of assorted, really random looking objects. As you reach this like threshold, this doorway, they don't immediately notice that you come in. And do you say anything or do you just wait respectfully for them to?
I wait in the doorway in silence for like a couple of beats. And then I go,
Oh, you scared me. You scared me.
Sorry.
Clove. No, please come in. Come in. Come in. Kind of wave a long hand in your direction, beckoning you in. There's already like tea set up, and it's less tea as we might conceptualize it, and more just like sweetened nectar, a little bit of hot water. It's kind of rudimentary, but it's delicious. And there is already some of this set out. Nobi is still kind of rustling through things. We are expecting a few others, but they should be here shortly. You're doing well, I hope. Please help yourself. Just rapid fire, but not really diverting.
Oh, thanks.
I chug the tea. One go.
It's so hot. It is so hot.
And now I'm doing the thing where you have to pretend the tea was not too hot.
Yeah, you're like, ugh. Yeah.
Is everything okay?
Everything's fine. Just a small hiccup, which I don't know, you know, I feel like I should have seen this coming, but I don't. You really try to, you hope for the best, you know, you instill things and you hope for the best, and that didn't actually, I think it's still gonna be fine. That's why you're here, actually.
Yeah, I get hiccups all the time.
While this is happening,
will be fine.
On the other side of this community, Marte, who in your family or clan would have sent you to see Nobi Echo?
Probably, yeah, I'm one of my elders.
Okay, so a Nobi of your own. What do you do? What is your kind of day-to-day? I don't want to call it a job, because that's not really a thing here, but what occupies your time, Marte?
Probably healing her passion is more of gardening kind of stuff, but they also get called a lot to just help her around with the healing stuff.
Absolutely. This glade where you currently live has not really been named. It is just sort of referred to as your glade, your home. And most fairies don't leave this place. It is plenty of space for the people living here, but it is actually a somewhat small kind of corner of this it's not mountainous, but there is this sort of hilly area on the western side of one particular island in the Shattered Isles that has lots of naturally occurring cover, outcroppings, and has just sort of been turned into this fairy community. Where your people have settled, life has sprung up. There is greenery here, vines hang across the homes. There are small shrubs and flowers. It's not like it's not forested, but there is plant life here. And Marte, you would know this, especially being a caster and connected to your people and the land in the way that you are. You know that this land is only sustainable and habitable because your people are here. Outside of this glade, the terrain is unforgiving and barren. But here, there is like a modicum of safety, and most people don't leave. That being said, there are some fae that venture out for whatever reason, hunting, scouting, just maybe for the lulls, whatever it may be, and oftentimes come back a little bit battered and bruised, which kind of reinforces other people not wanting to leave. And so you have seen your fair share of injuries, both minor and life-threatening, in your time as a healer in your community. You head over to Nobi Echo's home, and you see, in some distance, maybe, you know, 50, 60 feet, you see Clove disappear into the home as you're making your way there. And you arrive not long after seeing Clove, like, doing the universal symbol for a hot, like waving their hands near their face as you walk into this space.
I immediately go fly over there to them and like, are you okay? Are you all right? Would you need this tiny piece of leaf that relieves your stress? Here you go.
Oh, it was just really hot, but yeah, what is that? Uh-huh. Yep, I'll do that.
I immediately put it in my mouth.
It's a, I don't know, it's kind of a leaf that when you eat it, it kind of like cools you down. Like it's a refresher kind of herb.
Oh, this is nice. This is good stuff. You're so smart.
And smart?
It's good to see you.
I am smart? And like they look around and like, I am smart? I am smart. Thank you. Are you okay now?
Oh yeah, I'm totally fine.
They're already pouring themselves another cup of scalding hot tea.
I would imagine so.
Amazing.
Are we waiting for someone else?
As you say that, Marte, you also clock the other individual in the room, whom you recognize is one of the long-standing elders in this fae community, and they kind of nod as you say this. Yes, we're waiting on, I think, how many? One, two, three? I asked four, well, I don't, four, yes, we're waiting on a couple more. As they say that, another individual darkens the doorway. Rizal, you enter into this space. Who sent you here? And what is it that you do on a day-to-day basis in your community?
I would say that my older sister sent me here, like, probably just, like, family stuff of, like, in general, like, our family, their family scratches our back, we scratch theirs, like, probably just, you know, that type of stuff. I generally just, like, go, you know, ethically hunt stuff, and, you know, probably just stay updated on what's, like, the land around us, like, status of the land, like, kind of just getting, you know, so to speak, the heartbeat of the land, and also do some, like, hunting here or there, and, like, you know, cooking for my family, kind of just, like, a simple type of life that Rizal really enjoys.
Awesome. Yes, having been sent here by your sibling, you arrive and see Marte and Clove in this room. And all of you are aware of one another. How close you are is kind of up to you, but there's really no anonymity in a community this small, so you're all at least aware of one another and kind of what the other person's largely about. So you recognize the two individuals as well as Nobi Echo as you enter this space.
I'll just say, hi, Nobi Echo. I heard that we have to do a paybor. And I just like kind of wave and say and nod my head towards Marte and Clove. Like, I've seen them probably on paths outside of the village, like if they're going to go do stuff, and I'm like walking back in or walking out, just kind of like I've seen them around. Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I would just say that I don't know if Rizal gets into a lot of trouble, but I would imagine that Marte heals you a lot too.
Oh, sure. Yeah. That, you know what? Yeah. That's, I do that. And then anytime I, you know, get a little bit messed up from going out there, and my skin has like a lot of like healed up scars and wounds, and they all look nice in their own way, but you know, he's and it's not because he's careless, it's just like the nature of what he does and takes pride of it.
Yeah. You enter saying, I, you know, I heard there was a favor, and you hear a laugh for the first time, the three of you. Echo stops and looks up at you, Rizal. We never say favor, that's a tricky word, but I would appreciate some help if you're willing to offer. Come in. We should be expecting the last one here shortly. And he moves to offer both you, Marte, and you, Rizal, some tea that Clove is, like, putting away quicker than they expected.
It's so good.
I'll take a seat wherever, with the knee up, with the classic knee up, and enjoy this.
Love it.
That does bring us to you, Tiburon. You're making your way to Echo's house. Probably, again, some distance ahead of you, maybe 50, 100 feet or so, you see Rizal disappear into the space. Who sent you here, Tiburon, and what do you do?
Tiburon's purpose here is to be... helping out the hunter-gatherer group to provide any support should any creatures out of the ordinary or any sort of attacks happen, you know, just to provide a little bit of defense. So he does that with the hunter-gatherers, does that with the scouts, so he's just like just to provide the support, make sure that the folks going out on their duties are protected. And they come back in one piece, so that way Marte isn't constantly being requested and have to use their services and skills all the time. I think who let Dibodon know? I think it was something, since we're a close, tight-knit community, it was something that, you know, folks have been speaking about, and I just think... Dibodon's kind of saw it as like a good adventure to have, something a little bit out of the ordinary of, you know, provide support from, you know, the different folks in the community. So he wanted to offer their services to the Dobies and kind of provide a bigger role in the community as well.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. So rather than being summoned directly, you enter this space as a true volunteer, having kind of heard whispers on the street or in various places, because there's not really streets here either, that little one is causing trouble for Echo again. And you hear kind of this refrain from time to time over maybe over the last day or so, last couple of days. And so you, seeing people go into Echo's place, make yourself available and head in that direction. You are the last to arrive, and you see Marte and Rizal and Clove here. And all seated in these, like, these soft little cushions that are made of little bits of wool and flower petals and just sort of stuffed with organic material. All four of them are now kind of settling in as you walk into this space.
Dibudon comes into this area and raises her hand and waves at everyone and says, "Hey, how we doing, everyone? It's great to see you, Rizal. It's been a while since Marte. Hey, Marte, thank you so much for helping me out during the last trip. You know, I got a little scuffed up, but, you know, it's," he moves his shoulders a bit. It's like, it's feeling a lot better now. And it's just great to see everyone here. I know. Oh, Clove, how you been, Clove? It's been such a long time. You doing all right?
Yeah. It's so good awesome. To see you.
Yeah. Any idea? I guess we're going to find out what we're doing soon, right?
Yes, in fact, you are. And time is of the essence because I don't believe in mistakes. However, I may have made a miscalculation, and I would be very appreciative if you would retrieve someone who I feel might be in great danger if I am making the guesses about their location that I am. Let me back up. I'm getting ahead of myself. Please sit down. I need you to stand up, actually. I need you to get ready to go. Get your things.
Tiburon goes to sit, and then one goes crisscross applesauce, and one hand's like on the floor, like almost down, and it just pops back up.
Perfect. Yes. Let's walk and talk. They start to head out of this space, kind of unceremoniously, obviously expecting the four of you to follow.
We gotta go. Okay. Coming. Oh.
Still chugging the last bit of tea.
Echo reaches the threshold and takes off in flight up, higher into, like outside of the home. Into like you can see like they're heading up to what looks like a perch. This glade is sort of protected not only by just the natural magic of your people, but also now geographically, like physically, there has been plant life that has kind of shrouded this little glade and gives it some protection against not only the elements, but perhaps spying and prying creatures that may be in the area. But you can easily break through the canopy of vines and like where the rocks kind of meet and provide shelter, and you can get a look outside of the glade from up above, and you see that that's where Echo is headed.
Well, they're moving really fast, and I jump and really high, and as I'm about to go down, my wings come out and I just start flying over there.
Amazing. The four of you follow and eventually reach, breaking through a little bit of greenery. You reach this like flat surface made of red stone. And it is still partially like grown over, so it's like a little bit of an enclave or a cutout in the stone that you're able to get to, but you can see now this harsh deep orange glow of a sun that is kind of obfuscated from view by this like foggy massive landscape that is before you. It's a little bit difficult to see very far, just because the air quality is a little bit thick and it's not very clear. but you can see after your eyes adjust this desert landscape that extends out as far as you can see to the east. And as you get to the top, Nobi says,
I realize this is a bit of an ask, but I need you to go to Hainil Omar.
And as they say this, everybody give me a history check.
8.
21.
17.
Okay. Hainil Omar is a word in your native Fae, perhaps Sylvan, your native tongue that means the forbidden place.
Oh.
You all know the name. I would say Marte and Clove, you have heard stories about this place as the point of origin of your people. This is the first glade, for lack of a better word. But your people moved there, moved away from there many, many years ago, and no one goes back there. It's considered to be pretty dangerous. I would say Clove with a 21, especially this kind of works, given your biological connection to Echo. You probably would have heard stories in your own family unit, maybe from Echo, about the fairy's pilgrimage from Hainil Omar to your current home. You would know that this place is considered to be dangerous for two reasons. One, it is a place of very unstable magic. There are a lot of forces at work there, and the weave and the ley lines don't always behave as they should, given powerful influence from some other place. You're not exactly sure where. You would also know that your people, these Fae, are not from this place. And while all of you would know that your long, long ago ancestors are from the Feywild, Clove, you would know that your people, the people that are here now, were forced to this place. You're not exactly sure what happened or why, but you do know that the fairies that landed there made it for maybe a few months, maybe a year, before they ended up having to just move because so many people were dying, and they could not get the magic in the area under control to make it like a habitable, safe place to live. So you would have all of that information.
Gotcha.
It is not a place where any of the four of you have been. As Nobi explains, that's where you're going. They say, I myself have not been there since we left. And I made them, again, don't like the word mistake, the miscalculation of informing one of our youngest about this place. I'm not sure. Your cousin, Rain... Clove.
Okay. This makes sense now.
Yes. Well, they're gone. They have been gone for some time, and longer than usual, and I am fearful that I let story time get away from me their last trip, and they are probably going in pursuit of something. This is bad. This is bad. I only informed them of this place because I thought maybe teaching them of our history might enrich their understanding and appreciation of what we have now. And then they were gone before breakfast the next day. So I'm pretty sure that's where they went, and I need you to go get them.
All right. Well, seems easy enough except for the part where it's forbidden because everything is bad. But Rain is super, self-sufficient? We're on it.
Nobi gives you the longest, like, press X to doubt look ever.
I'm not convinced of what I'm saying either.
Yes. Well, they are just starting out, and so perhaps they might come into their skills one day, but as far as I know, I haven't spent any time teaching them how to use a blade or magic, so I don't really, besides their wonderful art, I don't really know what. This is bad. So, they move quickly. I need you to do the same. It should be to the east.
And Nobi kind of turns in a direction and points out across this landscape that you can see that extends on into the distant horizon.
It is on the next island over, so you will have to be very cautious crossing the sea. But if you just go straight, either through the mountains or along the coast, you should get there one way or the other. It will take you some time, so I would suggest going as prepared as possible.
So you're telling us that we need to go to the place that we're not supposed to go to. Is that right?
Yes. Well, yeah. Yes, I am saying that. I am saying that.
Okay.
Marta, don't worry. You have Tiburon with you.
That's true. This is a good group of people.
I'll just bite them. I'll go into a shark frenzy. It'll be fine.
Okay. Okay.
It's true. They did that to the creature that chomped my arm and totally saved my life. So, forever indebted to you, bestie. We got this.
You have nothing to worry about.
Okay, and I instinctually, like, whenever I'm kind of nervous, I start doing the grasshopper song that every, like,
yeah. Echo places what they hope is a reassuring hand on your shoulder.
There's safety in numbers. It's probably going to be fine. And Rain is quite young, so I don't know how far they've gotten, but the fact that they haven't come back yet means that they haven't given up. So, I don't know exactly where they'll be, but I anticipate that you have exactly what you need in your possession to do the job.
All right. Shall we go now? Later?
Yes. That would be great.
Okay.
Do you need anything from me before you go?
Can I take a couple of plants here? They look delicious, by the way.
Of course.
And I just grab a couple of them and I put it in my bucket.
Road snacks!
Yeah.
So, that next maybe hour or so, you're able to go back to your homes, gather whatever you might need for such a trip. I will say, probably Rizal. Actually, maybe all four of you. You know, that the island that you are currently on, although you have never been to the far eastern side of it, you are aware that it's not impossibly large. Especially you, Rizal, have probably gone part way up both of these paths in the past to do hunting and scouting, so you would know that you really have two options before you. Leaving the glade, you can kind of head southeast through what you consider to be the mountains. This bizarre extended rock formation that looks like these peaks and pieces of stone were put here or moved by force rather than naturally occurring. They are not smooth, like triangular peaks, but rather they are these massive pieces of earth that have been like tilted sideways up and pushed aside, creating this sort of very narrow valley that you can move through, like this ravine sort of type of situation. And you also know there is another path that heads to the northeast that hugs the coast. Outside of these rock formations, outside of these mountains, a much more open path exists. And I will just say, your knowledge, your background, you know that the mountainous path is probably safer. There's way more cover. There's far more places to hide. It is the more common of the two paths if there is somebody heading out of the glade.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, yeah, I was saying yes.
Oh, yeah. But you also know that that way, if you're headed to the other side of the island, is probably a little bit longer. So it would take you longer to travel that way, but it would be the safer route. The coastal path is much quicker, but it also is more dangerous because it's completely open. There is the mountains that are kind of on one side of you, but it is all open landscape and then coast. And you know that there are many beasts in these wilds that might be hanging around for an easy snack if you went that way. So there are a couple options before you.
I mean, I definitely would talk to the group about, okay, so we have a not problem, but we have to figure out which way we want to go. The mountain's longer but safer, and the coast is shorter but more dangerous. So, anyone have a preference?
I mean, we're all short and dangerous too, so.
It's true.
Yes.
Have a good point.
I choose the coast. I mean, you have a chance of seeing a shark on the coast, so.
Or I'm surprised, but yeah, that's fine with me.
Let's go to the coast then. Would anybody like a snack?
Yes.
Okay. And I hold out like
you.
All sorts of leaves and a few herbs and like offer it to anybody. And it's like popcorn, all different assorted popcorn fruit. Probably. So I'll just take a couple of spearmint leaves and I'll just eat it and offer it to anybody.
I already have snacks. And thank you. I'm good though.
Okay.
I take a small handful and just toss it in my mouth and just chomp at it. These are pretty good, Marte. Thank you so much. They're quite tasty.
Of course, of course, of course. If anybody likes, if anybody gets a craving, just let me know. I just put them away.
So, this conversation that you all have as you are beginning to head away from the glade comes back to your memory as the four of you stand several hours later, now surrounded by all of these slain bodies of these creatures that you have laid to waste fairly easily. Having decided on the coastal path, and not far from that split, eventually, you leave this place, this battleground, and head northeast, seeing the mountains scale ahead of you on your right and this massive ocean extend out to the left. I assume you guys are in the air. You take to the air as you move a little quicker that way. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. For sure.
Yeah.
Just double checking. You head out. I will say, probably for the first couple of hours, this is pretty familiar territory. It is not a path as much as it is flat land that is not impeded by stone. But you are able to stay kind of close enough to the mountains that you have a little bit of protection. And you can see out across this, like, gray and turbulent sea, this bright, kind of ominous orange sun in the sky, bathing everything in this orange-red light as you travel. I'm gonna have all four of you give me a stealth check here.
15.
12.
5.
Five.
That's not. That's still a number.
Yeah.
Still a good number.
Still a number.
Mm-hmm. Sure it is.
And Rizal, what did you get?
I also got a 5.
Okay.
Okay. Cool. Great. So the four of you set out, doing your best to stick together. Something that you note in your travel is the air as you move further and further away from the glade takes on this heavy, almost humid, kind of smoky quality. It is difficult to see for long distances. There's no mechanical impediment there, but you just note that, like, the air is not clear here. It does not smell fresh and clean. It smells like dust and sea salt and kind of like the stench of, like, stagnation. There's a lack of life here. There is no, there are not any spots of vegetation or really even any wildlife that you're familiar with. It is a desolate, kind of depressing place. And you just note how different it is from the cozy, homey place that you normally spend most of your time. As you travel, let's see here. Tiburon and Clove and Marte, all of you, maybe after a couple hours, hear a rush of wind from somewhere behind and above you.
Did you feel that?
Yeah.
I do. Not sure if I like it yet.
Then you make this sound out as you're whispering to one another, the flapping of large wings.
I preemptively knock an arrow.
Our first prey.
I will say, as Clove says, Rizal, you are kind of like tuning in to what's going on.
Yeah.
And all of you, as you're flying and starting to get a little nervous, see this massive shadow cast over you as something huge flies up above. And we're going to have to find out what happens next time on the Fayforge Academy.
How no dare you!
She said it. She said the lie.
I said the thing.
She said the lie.
She said the things.
Oh, my gosh.
Cool.
Hey, thanks so much for attending the Fayforge Academy today. Before you go, don't forget to check out our Patreon at patreon.com/Fayforge Academy. And also stop by Greenleaf Geek, which is at Greenleaf Geek on Twitter and Instagram, or greenleafgeek.com. Get all your dice needs fulfilled. And don't forget that if you use the code Fayforge on checkout, you'll get 10% off your order. We are also proud members of the Fandom Mentals Podcast Network, so make sure you go to thefandommentals.com to catch up on all sorts of pop culture and nerd stuff. They have a lot of great articles, a lot of other great podcasts. Check them out. And with that, I am your Dungeon Master, Steven. You can find me on Twitter at @the_badDM.
My name is Ian Gould, and you can find me on Twitter at @EanGGould.
Hey, I'm Chris. I like to hang out. You can do so alongside me on Twitter at @KissOfHemlock.
Hey, I'm Adelaide Gardner. You can find me at @OAdelaide.
Hi, I'm Emily, or M, and you can find me at Emily Irv, that's EmilyErv, on Twitter and Instagram.
My name is Michael Sinclair II. You can find me at Michael Critz on Twitter and on Twitch.
Theme music by Dave Cole of the Four Orbs Podcast. For more music, check out D. Cole Music on YouTube. Additional sound effects and music found at zapsplat.com, tabletopaudio.com, and epidemicsound.com. The Fayforge Academy is a proud member of the Fandamentals Podcast Network.